910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. With the blessing of King Charles to form a government now achieved, Labour leader Keir Starmer has officially become the Prime Minister of Great Britain, ending 14 years of Conservative rule. Rishi Sunak, the outgoing Prime Minister, offering his resignation to King Charles. Hurricane Beryl has made landfall just northeast of Tulum, Mexico. Maximum sustained winds now 110 miles an hour, making it a Category 2 storm. The government's June employment report is due in about an hour from the Labor Department. Here's ABC's Daria Albinger.
Employers created 272,000 jobs in May. The June report is expected to show a gain of 190,000, still historically strong, but much smaller, and a sign that the economy may be starting to cool. Look for the jobless rate to remain 4%.
The economy, one of the big issues in the presidential campaign. President Biden expected to talk about it during campaign stops in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania today. The president also talking about last week's debate performance with ABC's George Stephanopoulos today. This is ABC News. New York City police say three people were killed and seven others injured when a suspected drunk driver plowed his vehicle into a crowded park on Thursday night. NYPD Chief Jeffrey Madry says many of those in the park were families enjoying the 4th of July holiday.
As these families were enjoying the 4th of July celebration, a gray pickup truck, a Ford F-150, driving at a high rate of speed on Water Street, eastbound, ran through the intersection of Water Street and Cherry Street, through the stop sign, up onto the sidewalk, into Corliss Hook Park, and struck people who were out enjoying the evening.
NYPD says the incident does not appear to be terror related. 4th of July fireworks in Marblehead, Massachusetts, canceled after a fire broke out on a barge the fireworks were to be launched from. Nobody was hurt, and nobody was on board that boat when the fire broke out. They say they're looking for another date. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Native American issues are human issues. Join Robert Plant with Native Roots for their program Awake at their new time of 9 p.m. Mondays through Fridays. Awake is proudly sponsored by Wisconsin Community Health Representatives.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because feeling full can sound like this.
How did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
And like this.
Mom, I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project!
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations!
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden tells Civic Media's Earl Ingram that Donald Trump wants to undo all he's done for black Americans.
I'm sorry to get so worked up, but he is just, he's done terrible things to the community, and he has about as much interest and concern for black and minority communities as the man in the moon does.
Biden says he's appointed black leaders to high positions in government and fostered a boom in black-owned businesses. Biden campaigns in Madison Friday. The leader of the University's of Wisconsin's second biggest school is stepping down. UW-Milwaukee Chancellor Mark Mone says he plans to return to his faculty position in UWM's business school next spring. Mone was chancellor for 10 years. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers head to Dodger Stadium. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Brewers are in L.A. to open a three-game holiday weekend series against the Los Angeles Dodgers tonight. Milwaukee's still in first place with a six-game lead over St. Louis in the NL Central. The Dodgers in first place in the West with a six-and-a-half-game lead over the Padres. Tonight will be the debut of 29-year-old right-hander Aaron Civale, picked up in that trade earlier this week with Tampa Bay, against the Dodgers veteran righty Taylor Glasnow, who played for the Rays and the Pirates before that. Last night in Denver, the Brewers' bats went cold. They lost 4-3 to the Rockies, who had jumped out to an early 3-0 lead. And although the Rockies are in last place, they managed to split the four-game series with the Brewers. Pat Murphy after the loss.
There was a ton of opportunities tonight, I think, and a couple miscues defensively that cost us, but it's tough to have the intensity every night, but we do keep it close, and I'm just, you catch me 15 minutes after the game, I'm going to be disappointed.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Mostly cloudy with a chance of an isolated shower or thundershower through about midday and then gradually becoming partly cloudy here this afternoon. Our high today, 71. Tonight, partly cloudy, 51. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with an isolated thunderstorm possible. Our high tomorrow, 78. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 58.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Jane is off, but I, Greg Bach, am hosting in her stead. We welcome Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, as well as Civic Media's very own Luke Mathers. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wasota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning and welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, and brought to you by Courier Newsroom, carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. From Chippewa Falls, I'm Pat Breitlove for a best of Up North News Radio on this Friday, July 5th. Nice to have you here. Coming up this hour, we've got conversations with Mike Stranz from the National Farmers Union about what proposed Republican budget cuts would do to rural Wisconsin if a farm bill does eventually pass, and it does eventually have to pass. We'll also talk a bit more about the chatter this week about whether President Biden should stay in the race for president or not. And then we've got our conversation with Melissa Baldoff and Joe Zepecki. We normally talk to them on Wednesdays and Thursdays, but most of their talking is together as my favorite little Wisconsin power couple. And then we'll revisit a conversation with my old TV 13 colleague, Bob Gallagher, along with Dan Schumacher. But we start first on Capitol Hill with Mike Stranz from the National Farmers Union and what prospects look like for a Congress in gridlock that needs to work on a farm bill. So as we head into the 2024 campaign cycle, we've come out of a two-year congressional cycle where House Republicans had the majority, unlike the 2 years prior. And unlike 2 years ago, when Republicans were running in House seats and trying to be a little vague about, you know, their plans, they were running away from a plan written up by Florida Senator Rick Scott and saying, oh, we're not really like that. This year, there's enough people there on the far right that they're embracing the things that they're running on, including through a group called the Republican Study Committee in the House, which has put together a blueprint for how they would handle the budget in 2025. And you're going to be hearing a lot about it in things like the way that it's going to, if passed, would raise the retirement age for Social Security. It would threaten in vitro fertilization. It would do a whole host of things that Republicans have talked about doing for a long time, all in one fell swoop. Well, the Republican Study Committee does include every current House Republican, which is Scott Fitzgerald, Glenn Grothman, Brian Stile, and Tom Tiffany. And, you know, many or all of them have a good chunk of rural Wisconsin in their district. And there would be impacts on rural Wisconsin if this budget blueprint were to be adopted. We certainly saw that from the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, recently. And so I wanted to bring in our friend Hans Breitenmoser to talk a bit about it. And he went and brought a friend as well. Mike Stranz is the Vice President for Advocacy for the National Farmers Union. And he joins us from Washington, D.C. Hans, good morning to you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Pat, and good morning, Mike.
What is happening up there in the Merrill area this week? I know we can no longer complain about drought-like conditions.
No, we got some rain, but it was needed. That slowed us down a little bit, so we had to stop putting seed in the ground and stop hauling manure. But today we're going to try and get some manure hauled again, and hopefully in a few days here we'll be back out there turning some dirt and trying to get some seed in the ground again.
All right. Well, you have been, of course, active in the Wisconsin Farmers Union for quite some time here. So when I told you I kind of wanted to talk about this national Republican blueprint, and you were able to get a hold of Mike and have him join us from D.C., I have a feeling that they're well aware of what congressional Republicans are proposing, Hans. And you've been out to D.C., so you have a pretty good sense of what kind of an advocacy arm you have out there.
Yeah. Yep. So we brought in the big guns today and went straight to the top.
All right.
And enlighten us a little bit on some of the things that National Farmers Union has for priorities and so forth. And yeah, sometimes they don't line up with our policymakers. So
no, which is something we'll get into over the next few minutes. Mike, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the invite, Hans, and good to be on the show today, Pat.
Yeah, well, again, you're plenty familiar with what is being talked about by members of the Republican Study Committee, and many of them are on the House Agriculture Committee. So what is National Farmers Union's top line overview of this potential budget blueprint if it were to be, adopted in full as is? What would it mean?
Yeah, so the Republican Study Committee report that came out comes at an important time, given that we're right up against the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill expired back in September of 2023, was extended for another year. So right now, we're about a month away, less than a month probably, from when the House Agriculture Committee is going to hold a markup on the next version of the Farm Bill. So these proposals out there from the Republican Study Committee fed into and are feeding into the process they're following to put forward a draft for this next Farm Bill. So some of the cuts and changes to programs in there would be a big impact if immediately enacted. And even if not immediately fully enacted, they would also work into the mix for what is going to be part of that Farm Bill. And I think it would have some big impacts for farmers and just people in general across Wisconsin.
What are some of the things that we might see specifically in terms of whether it's subsidies that keep farms alive with low market prices, but also what they are able to receive by putting unused land into conservation programs? What are some of the exact impacts that some of rural Wisconsin could see in this package?
Yeah, so a lot of the proposals in the study committee's blueprint left us thinking like, okay, so where's the rest of it? There's a cut made, but nothing to replace it. No plan beyond that, just eliminating some of these initiatives. For instance, like you mentioned, making sure there's land in conservation, the Conservation Reserve Program, the proposal would just end new signups. And that's, CRP has been a big part of the conservation plan going on across the country for decades now. And it's had some successes along the way. And to just eliminate it or leave it as it is, letting it kind of wither away, isn't really a plan. That's just cutting something. And then probably even more striking is the proposal to eliminate the dairy programs in the Farm Bill. And granted, Farmers Union would be the first to say we need some big changes to the dairy programs, but to just eliminate them without putting into effect some sort of revitalization plan like Wisconsin Farmers Union, the National Farmers Union have talked about, seems irresponsible. So it would be a striking change.
Well, that's just it, is that it's not that you're being simply reactive to a proposal like this, but that National Farmers Union and Wisconsin Farmers Union, you've put ideas on the table. You've gone, Hans, you've been to D.C., you've talked to individual members of Congress. So again, you've got actual things they could work on if they wanted to have a conversation with you about specific changes that would be positive for Wisconsin farmers, right, Mike?
Yeah, the Hans and company and the rest of Wisconsin Farmers Union and Farmers Union members around the country have been to D.C. to advocate specifically on the dairy proposals, but also other Farm Bill proposals that would be harmed by the proposals in the study committee. And if that just went into law as it is, we'd feel it and it wouldn't take long.
Hans, what are your thoughts on, you know, again, just scrapping some of these policies around dairy and around conservation, as opposed to working to fine tune these things? You know, what's your take on this whole package?
Well, you know, I think we have to zoom out a little bit and think about what most farmers want. And I think Mike alluded to it earlier, right? Most farmers are not looking for handouts. We would prefer to have a fair share of the market, a fair share of the pie, if you will, and stable prices. And so, you know, instead of, you know, spending so much mental energy figuring out how to cut CRP and so forth, maybe some of these policymakers should be a little more concerned about antitrust legislation that gets us some of the prices that we have to begin with. That's the bigger, greater issue here. I think these safety nets are well-intentioned and well-received, but let's figure out how to get us to a point where family farmers can make a living and there's some sort of parity so that some of these subsidies wouldn't be necessary to begin with.
Well, and it appears that these cuts are motivated by one main factor, and Secretary Vilsack has pointed it out as well, and that's the one thing that Republican politicians say they're trying to do for farmers is they talk about the estate tax. And we're going to get rid of that estate tax because that is so onerous to farmers. But Vilsack noted that in 2020, 31,000 farmers passed away. 189 of that 31,000 had estates that had to file estate taxes, and only 50 farms out of those 31,000 paid the estate tax. The total tax paid was $130 million compared to farm wealth transfer of $56 billion. In other words, Mike, you know, use pick and a poke or whatever saying you want, but this is, you know, this is not about farmers. This is about wealthy donors.
Mm-hmm. Those estate tax issues come up time and again whenever there's a tax package about to move. And while there are sometimes we see proposals that would start to impact family farmers more and more, what's really been happening hasn't gotten even close to that yet. So we need to keep a close eye on that and make sure that if there are tax changes to the estate tax, step up in basis, a lot of different proposals out there, that they're not going to hit family farmers and ranchers. But sometimes that gets pulled out of scale.
Sure.
Sometimes,
well,
sometimes I think we're farming red herrings.
I can understand that. And again, like you said about dairy and conservation programs, when it comes to, you know, amending the tax code and making sure that it's not, you know, harmful to most family farmers, there are ideas and proposals out there. You know, just a giveaway to billionaires is not necessarily one of them. Mike, tell me more about some of what National Farmers Union has been advocating for either in this current session or having seen how gridlocked it is, you're already looking ahead to what you're going to advocate for in the next session of Congress.
Well, Hans hit on it already, and that's making sure we're addressing the issue of monopolies in agriculture. If you want to make a difference without spending a lot of federal dollars to improve the farm economy for individual family farmers and ranchers, go after antitrust. Push for that. We've seen some big steps by the Biden administration over the last couple of years. Better enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act, that's helped a lot and will continue to help. We've seen the Federal Trade Commission go after and look into acquisitions and mergers and farm inputs, whether that's on machinery, on right to repair, or on fertilizer businesses. Just last week, the chair of the Federal Trade Commission was in Iowa speaking with farmers union leaders about the Koch industry proposed purchase of Iowa fertilizer. So go after those sorts of things. Build a more competitive market. It doesn't cost all that much compared to a lot of the other programs out there, and it makes a huge difference for family farmers.
Mike Stranz, Vice President for Advocacy for the National Farmers Union. This has been a real pleasure, a privilege. Thank you. I hope you'll come back again soon.
Be glad to. Thanks for having me.
All right. Hans, thank you so much. Good luck with planting and everything else out there. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Pat.
Coming up next, I've got some opinions on all this talk about whether President Biden should stay in the race or get out. That's next here up north.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Sneezing, coughing, stuffy nose, runny nose, post-nasal drip, interrupted sleeping. I was groggy at the end of the day.
Allergies and sinus congestion were making Jana miserable. Then, a friend recommended Navage. Navage provides immediate drug-free congestion relief, flushing your nasal passages with refreshing saline and sucking out mucus, germs, and other airborne irritants. Navage helps you breathe easier, sleep better, and feel your best right away.
Navage gave me instant relief. I didn't have to wait 30 minutes. I didn't have to wait an hour, 90 minutes. I didn't have to wait a minute. I ran the rinse and I felt better.
Stop suffering from congestion and start breathing and feeling your best again with Navage. N-A-V-A-G-E.
I've had people ask me how I find relief, and I tell them Navage immediately. This thing is amazing.
Navage is available at Navage.com or at Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is IGY, a song by Donald Fagen, and it's noted because it was on July 1st of 1957, and then through 1958 marked something called IGY, the International Geophysical Year. It was an international science project and marked the end of a long period during the Cold War when scientific interchange between the East and the West had been seriously interrupted. And instead, there was this dedication toward doing much more about sharing information on things ranging from meteorology to physics to oceanography to seismology. And it led to a lot of optimism at the time about what the world of the future would look like. And Donald Fagen captured that in his song about, you know, traveling undersea. We have the tunnel now under the English Channel, people wearing spandex jackets, so many other things. And sometimes we need to be reminded that for all of the yucky stuff out there in the world, shall we say, there's still a lot of good things out there. But yes, Greg, leave it to Donald Fagen to sing about a 1957 song about scientific sharing of information.
Nerd. Okay.
Turning it into some relentless optimism. So,
but the thing is, I grew up in like listening to progressive rock and metal, which is all like, you know, dragons and swords and leave it to Donald Fagen to talk about a topic like this. But like, just you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. He and Steely Dan, no one does it better than that.
Exactly right. The Up North News Daily newsletter reminds us, and I'd forgot about this, Happy Bobby Bonilla Day, which someday will also be known as Christian Yelich Day, he explains. In the newsletter, it notes that the New York Mets will again be teased today about a deal they made back in 2000 with their superstar player, where Bobby Bonilla let the Mets agree to keep the $6 million that they owed him that year, and in return, agree to be paid over a much longer period, a period still going on. It means from now until 2035, the Mets send him a $1 million check every July 1st. So the Mets got to save $6 million back in 2000 when they really needed it. But by the time they pay it back with interest, it'll be $30 million. And he gets a $1 million check well into his 70s. Well, when Christian Yelich was negotiating his current 9-year, $215 million contract 4 years ago, he and the Brewers owner, Mark Adonasio, agreed to defer $30 million of the contract. The team will pay him $2.5 million annually from 2031 to 2042, long after his playing days are over. And when Adonasio and Yelich's agent couldn't agree on whether the payments should be made on January 1st or maybe, you know, in October at the end of every baseball season, they settled on July 1st as a tribute to Bobby Bonilla. So when Bobby Bonilla's payments stop on July 1st of 2035, Christian Yelich's July 1st payments will continue on to 2042. So happy Bobby Bonilla Christian Yelich Day.
Shohei Ohtani took the same thing. He deferred $680 million of his contract that he'll start getting paid in 2034 through 2043, $68 million a year.
Oh, my gosh.
I have failed in life. Seriously, I've done nothing correct.
So you can learn more about that in the Up North News daily newsletter and so much more. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Yeah, we are not getting paydays like that today. Folks, I am really looking forward to the presidential election of 2028. Two new candidates, a new American chapter, but some of you are trying to cut the line and you need to let that go. Any sense of instant gratification like that is a privilege that, frankly, we're not going to get. If you want to get to a new chapter in American politics, you're going to need to do the work in the here and now. And that takes us to the reaction to last week's poor debate performance by Joe Biden. Now, I'm a little hesitant to do this, but I'm going to make a confession. Back when Joe Biden first took office, I thought that he'd maybe serve 3 years and then pull a Judge Smales from Caddyshack. Like, oh, my arm, it's broken. You know, some kind of a health concern, something where after he'd already done what America needed most, which was remind Americans to show up on Election Day 2020 and start digging ourselves out of this mess, I thought there was a good chance he might then enjoy a well-earned retirement and show up in all the ribbon cuttings for the next decade of all the good stuff he and a Democratic Congress did to invest in the country again. And look, if he would have pulled out of the race, say, last August, it would have been his signal that we want a wide-open primary. Or maybe he'd have pulled out, say, last November as a signal to get behind Kamala Harris or get out. But here's the thing. Whether you wanted him to do it or not, he didn't. Maybe in part because Donald Trump still hasn't faced consequences for attempting a coup, for being a Putin puppet, for botching a pandemic, for jacking up the deficit with tax cuts for billionaires. So Trump, a convicted felon, an adjudicated rapist, a serial liar, is still a threat to take over the United States government. Joe Biden has beaten him. Nobody else has. Biden has been underestimated throughout his career by his peers, by the press, by the chattering class. He was left for dead on the side of the road in January of 2020, but now, in hindsight, does anyone think one of the other 2020 Democratic candidates had a chance against Trump? Stop kidding yourself. One ticket did that. Biden and Harris. Now some of you want Biden to quit because of one bad debate, and some of you want the first black vice president to have to re-audition for the job. Really? Black women are the unsung heroes of today's Democratic Party. They are Katherine Johnson at NASA. You appreciate the work, but you want to wait 60 years before publicly acknowledging it. This isn't Hidden Figures. This is the here and now. Celebrate them right now. Don't insult them. Kamala Harris is staying right where she belongs. And for now, so is Joe Biden. Unless, or until, his political instincts, which have consistently been better than the average bear, tell him otherwise. Let me give a little credit to Kirk Bangstad at the Minocqua Brewing Company for making a point about this over the weekend. He writes an essay every Sunday. A lot of times it's about the ups and downs of his continued battle with doing business in Deep Red Oneida County. But this weekend's post reminded us that in 1944, Franklin Roosevelt faced the same not-so-quiet whisper campaign. But the voters knew better. They knew that when faced between two options, there was one option where leadership does not require you to be an Olympic athlete. It does not even require you to be the loudest talker in the room, especially when the loud talker is lying and showing that he cannot be trusted to lead. Open up the blinders, folks. Look at the whole expense in front of us. There's a leader who's given us the strongest economy in the world, and there's the guy trashing the economy as a path to power. The whole expanse is in front of us, including 2028. But we have to do the work in 2024 first with the people who have already proven they can get it done. You're up north.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
A new outreach program is targeting kids in the rural community, trying to get them excited about more education. I'm PM Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Friday. It's called the College for Rural Wisconsin. Jennifer Blazik's their director, and she'll explain what it is next.
What does life on the cutting edge mean to alfalfa grower Dan Sheps?
Harv Extra has been very consistent on our test results from first crop through fourth crop. The higher quality has allowed us to feed more alfalfa haylage in our diet, and cows are able to have a higher intake with a higher quality forage.
What does life on the cutting edge mean to alfalfa grower Riley Lepenka?
Making hay has changed so much now with Harv Extra alfalfa. You don't have to be tied down to a certain cutting window. That saves us a lot of headache, a lot of cost, wear and tear on machinery, you name it. I don't see any farm that it wouldn't work. Any kind of operation, if you have 10 cows, 10,000, it doesn't matter.
What does life on the cutting edge mean for alfalfa growers? Flexibility, yield, or quality? Harv Extra alfalfa with Roundup Ready technology gives you an extra edge every time you harvest. Hear grower stories at harvextra.com.
The College to You Roadshow comes up next week, July 9th. Jennifer Blazik is the program director for the College for Rural Wisconsin. She said a recent survey they conducted showed just exactly where rural students need a little help.
We did a recent survey of high school students and UW-Madison students who are from rural areas. And one of the top things that came out of that was applications and just support and help through not only applying to college, but that application process and how to understand that. So we're really working on that right now and are building out not only resources that people can access anytime on our website, but also that we can support and provide in person at schools around that college application process.
Jennifer Blazik, she is the program director for the College for Rural Wisconsin. If you'd like to find out more about what's going on with the College to You Roadshow, or a little bit more on the support mechanism they've put in place to try to help rural students discover secondary education and four-year campuses, go to collegefororural.wisc.edu. And UW Extension staff are reminding farmers to slow down and take care of yourself. We understand the stress you're facing with the weather conditions and economic market conditions. They say exercise, one way to try to reduce levels of your body's stress hormones. Mindfulness, practicing paying attention on purpose. Slow, deep breathing can help reduce your blood pressure. Gratitude and practicing gratitude is something that can also help you with stress. And getting a social support network to help you get through your day-to-day. Just some tips from UW Extension. I'm PM Yonke.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. With the blessing of King Charles to form a government now achieved, Labour leader Keir Starmer has officially become the Prime Minister of Great Britain, ending 14 years of Conservative rule. Rishi Sunak, the outgoing Prime Minister, offering his resignation to King Charles. Hurricane Beryl has made landfall just northeast of Tulum, Mexico. Maximum sustained winds now 110 miles an hour, making it a Category 2 storm. The government's June employment report is due in about an hour from the Labor Department. Here's ABC's Daria Albinger.
Employers created 272,000 jobs in May. The June report is expected to show a gain of 190,000, still historically strong, but much smaller, and a sign that the economy may be starting to cool. Look for the jobless rate to remain 4%.
The economy, one of the big issues in the presidential campaign. President Biden expected to talk about it during campaign stops in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania today. The president also talking about last week's debate performance with ABC's George Stephanopoulos today. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A judge in Madison is striking down parts of Act 10, the state law that took away collective bargaining rights for most public workers. Dane County Judge Jacob Frost says parts of the law violate the constitutional right to equal protection because law enforcement was exempted. It's not clear exactly how Wednesday's ruling will be applied. There's more law enforcement out on the water this holiday weekend, making sure people are boating sober. Savannah Tomei Olson has more on Operation Dry Water.
Please be careful on the water this weekend. Since the project began in 2009, law enforcement has gotten more than 6,000 drunk boaters off the water. The DNR says wear life vests and have a designated driver. Alcohol is a leading factor in boating deaths. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
That's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Matthew Perry had over $1.5 million in his personal bank account at the time of his death. People magazine reports that the late actor wanted his items to be put in an account named the Alvy Singer Living Trust. Alvy Singer was the name of Woody Allen's character in Annie Hall. His full list of assets has not yet been disclosed. An investigation into Perry's death by the LAPD, DEA, and U.S. Postal Inspector is nearing a conclusion. There is nothing like being on a reality competition show as a celebrity contestant and then wanting nothing to do with it. Such is the case with Jason Mraz. He told Jesse Tyler Ferguson on his Dinners on Me podcast that he thought he would only be part of the show for 2 or 3 weeks before being voted off, but then realized he was one of the better dancers and would be there the entire time. He says he missed his cat so much he wanted out and started asking his friends not to vote for him. Despite this, he still made it to the final round. Not a fan of cats, but I admire the conviction. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Waba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy with a chance of an isolated shower or thundershower through about midday and then gradually becoming partly cloudy here this afternoon. Our high today, 71. Tonight, partly cloudy, 51. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with an isolated thunderstorm possible. Our high tomorrow, 78. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 58.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Most of my angst comes from the grocery store. I end up behind that person with the checkout line trifecta of coupons, lottery tickets, and writing a personal check. Another checkout person comes and says, I can take someone on aisle 3. Who should be the first person they take? The next person in line, right? Where I am, it's a free-for-all. It's like roller derby. It didn't infuriate me, but I was kind of like, whatever.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Jane is off, but I, Greg Bach, am hosting in her stead. We welcome Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, as well as Civic Media's very own Luke Mathers. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It is now my distinct pleasure to have our Wednesday and Thursday morning guests, Joe Zepecki, Melissa Baldoff, from left to right on my screen. How are you guys?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. Where are we gathered here? Are those like decorative photos, family photos behind you, or where are you at?
You might say it's the story of us. We've got some wedding photos back there, some family photos, the invite, the Obergefell decision, the conclusion of that, which we made sure it was read at our wedding ceremony.
Kids.
Yeah. Nice. So is this the kitchen, little dining area?
Dining room.
Gotcha. All right. Well, good. Well, see, I feel like I'm feeling more and more like Edward R. Murrow.
Well, see, we don't usually eat in here. We usually do eat at the kitchen table. So I often work. You usually see me at a different end of this table from a different view of it. We just do it wherever things go is where we set up and work.
Right. But do you, as people who have been consultants, strategists, things like that, for as hard as you work, nobody's second guessing that, but do you kind of like, I appreciate what technology lets us do now that you're probably not on the road nearly as much as the people who did all of our various jobs, as they say, back in the day?
You know, it's funny you should ask that, Pat. When we got together, when we got married, I had already been a consultant without an office. I was working from home. And so we all moved in together, and then I was working out of the house and Melissa was going to work. And then a pandemic happened and that stopped, and now we both work from home. And you know what? It's been perfect, flawless, no notes. I wish it had been like this the whole time. Agreed?
You know, I love sharing space with you. That's not an issue. I will say the internet leaves a little bit to be desired, especially when we also had virtual schooling going on. So that is a little challenging. But yeah, I mean, working from home is great. It definitely beats the drive back and forth to Madison, which is something I know you can relate to. And your drive back and forth to Madison was longer than mine was. So yeah, it's nice being able to, you know, to work wherever and get things done wherever you need to be able to get them done. And, you know, and sometimes you have to go in person and be somewhere in person for something, but it's nice to be able to get as much done remotely as you can. That is a great perk of the era we are in.
The funny thing about pre-recording this is that in answer to the question of, you know, this is working out, right? I can edit in as long a pause as I want before Melissa provides her answer. So I might have to take a little creative control over this, but no, it is working. And we're really glad that we get time with you every week to visit on climate issues, political issues, all the other things that you guys are working on, which gets us back to, and we may have talked about this over the December holidays, but I'd like to do it again, to borrow the line from the movie Office Space. What is it that you'd say that you do around here? Talk to us both a little bit more about, I don't know if you would call it a typical day or a typical week, or maybe a typical week. What are some of the things that you do pretty much every week that maybe people don't know about or we don't talk about when we're talking about the headlines? Melissa, why don't you start?
Well, obviously the highlight of every week is talking with you, Pat, and sharing news about climate progress and what's happening with our environment and our clean economy and the jobs that we're creating in green jobs we're creating in Wisconsin. So that's one of my main highlights every week. But, you know, I say a typical week for me could look like a lot of things, but generally, you know, it includes things like talking to reporters still. You know, that hasn't changed since I left the governor's office, still chatting with a lot of reporters about things. Working with clients to produce media events around the state, whether those are in person or virtual, you know, consulting with my clients on what they're trying to accomplish, you know, whether it's in terms of their long-term goals, their short-term goals, how we can use, you know, paid media or earned media to achieve those goals. So it really can look like a lot of different things. You know, it's nice to have some flexibility that I didn't used to have before in my day to day. But a lot of the tactics are still the same things that I was doing when I was in, you know, say the governor's office or working for local government. Still a lot of the same kinds of work, but having a little bit more flexibility and doing them with a number of different kinds of clients and organizations is really interesting and is a good challenge for my brain to have to think in different ways about different things.
And how about you, Joe?
Everything she said, she nailed it almost perfectly. I mean, I'll just put a finer point on one of the additional ways that the world has changed with technology is when in the before times you needed to do a press conference, sometimes you had to pack up and go all the way to La Crosse, for example. Now, sometimes you can do that from a Zoom and still deliver a message to the right audience. And so there are still days when it makes a lot of sense for us to get in the car or go down to Racine or to Madison or up to Green Bay or whatever it is. And other than that, a lot of what we do can be done from home, whether that's strategizing with clients, whether that's putting together plans with teams to present to clients, coming up with new strategies and new ways to ultimately communicate about the world that we want to see. And that is ultimately, we are very, very fortunate to be able to work on projects and with clients and organizations who share our values and our worldview. And what we're ultimately trying to help them accomplish is make the world a better place, make Wisconsin a better place, and make it closer to the vision that we have.
And I would add that the places Joe mentioned are among the places we have both been in the past week.
Very true. Is there, and look, we're not here to disparage any clients or candidates or parties or things like that in asking this question, but is there, would you say in your experience, there's a particular magic wand that somebody's expecting from you and you want to say to them, hey, I'm good, but I can't do that. Is there an unrealistic expectation when a prospective client reaches out to you in terms of what you're able to do to help them communicate a message or lobby on behalf of something or some other service that you provide?
I just want to make clear I'm rejecting the premise of the question. I'm here to dunk on Eric Hovde. Just throw me an alley-oop and it will happen. In terms of the, is there a problem that can't be solved by communications? Absolutely. And what it comes down to is when people, I think, find themselves in a crisis situation, sometimes it is out of their control. Sometimes it is mistakes or malfeasance that were made, and then people are left kind of holding the bag and trying to pick it up. Communications in those crisis moments is really, really important. And communications in a vacuum, disconnected from the reality an organization is living, is meaningless. It's not authentic. It's not real. And so I think a way that we both think about this is communications is critical, but it has to match reality. We're not here to spin or to make stuff up or to, you know, be off in one direction when the reality is
another. We might spin a little bit, but we don't make stuff up. So I would also add, we don't get to, one thing I would say though is, you know, we don't get to write the headlines. But a thing I always kind of approach the work with in mind and try to talk to clients through is, like Joe said, if there is ever a crisis situation, you might not be able to completely repair what's going on, but you can at least begin to repair trust with the media and with the community and get things to a better place. That way, when the next story comes or the next story comes, you're in a better place to keep things moving and to begin to tell your story again. But I do think, like Joe said, that good communication, honest, transparent, robust communication can do a lot of things.
So what I'm hearing is for all of the talk that we make on this program about what we call the right-wing echo chamber, that they've created their own reality, the fact of the matter is that can happen to any of us. It can happen inside a company. It can happen inside an industry. And you're helping bring a certain level of outside perspective, it sounds like, that fresh point of view that hopefully most clients are grateful for after you've finished your work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, it's all about, figuring out the right audience and the right story to tell them from the right storyteller, how that's going to connect and how that's going to, you know, help achieve goals. And that can be, that can be something that's, related to a public good, right? That could be communicating about a project in your community. How do you help people understand about, a big infrastructure project in a community? It can be helping launch a new product for a business. It could be anything. So yeah, it's really about figuring out who you need to talk to, what they need to hear, who they need to hear it from, and how it's going to achieve those goals.
All right, well, let's take that and bring it back to the world of politics that we talk about so often. And for folks who are listening to this and they're thinking, not this year, obviously, but they're thinking they would like to maybe run for office someday, or maybe they would like to advocate more for their favorite cause or, you know, for their favorite group. What would you tell people who aren't doing anything right now, but they're thinking of finding a way to be an advocate, to be that neighborhood activist, if you will. Where do you even start?
Start by doing it. If you are thinking about that, jump up, raise your hand. There are terrific organizations ranging from the state Democratic Party to Demand Justice, if you're thinking about running for a judge position or applying for a judge position to be appointed. If you want to learn how to be a candidate, if you want to learn how to be a staff person on campaigns, there are organizing opportunities and training opportunities that are always available and people to support you, which I got to say, 25 years ago was not as much the case as it is now. There is much more infrastructure to support you, ranging from Emerge, if you are a pro-choice woman who wants to run, like there are programs and trainings and things that can help you. So if you want to step up, raise your hand and there will be resources to support you.
I would really echo that, especially for women considering running. Women have to be asked to run for office many, many more times than men do. Emerge Wisconsin is a fantastic resource for women who are thinking about running for office now or in the future. It's a great training program. If you're thinking about doing that, get involved with Emerge or with your local Democratic Party at the county level. We'll also have resources. And I would say, like Joe said, just get involved, just start doing, you know, find a local Moms Demand Action Group, whatever your cause is, right? If it's environmental, your Sierra Club chapter, your Wisconsin Conservation Voters chapter, find whatever your issue is, whatever your passion is. There is probably an organization with a chapter near you in Wisconsin. We are a state with a lot of active organizations doing this fantastic advocacy work. And, you know, if there's an issue near and dear to your heart that you don't see something going on with, I bet you could find some people close by who are interested and you can get started. We've seen that happen before. And Pat, we've talked to people on the show who got engaged around issues in their community. I think about the folks up in Superior who got engaged around issues in their community and the folks down in Beloit, right? So, if you don't see something specific, find people who agree with you and get engaged.
Melissa Baldoff, Joseph Pecky, thanks for letting us take advantage of the Independence Day work week. Since we can't do a 4th of July, backyard barbecue together, it's nice to metaphorically kick our feet up for a bit and be able to chat. Thanks so much for doing that today.
Happy 4th, everybody.
Thanks.
And we will be back after this. You're up north.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Whether it's a picnic in the park or a cool and easy dinner, when it's too hot to cook, sandwiches in summer go together like peanut butter and jelly. And there's no better bread to build your favorite sandwich on than Country Hearth Natural Breads. Try their Dakota-style 12-grain or 100% whole wheat bread. Bake the old-fashioned way with whole grains and real honey. Country Hearth Hearty Breads are not only a nutritious choice for your family, but a delicious one too. Country Hearth Breads, locally baked and delivered fresh daily.
The big winners are in for the Scotty Summer Contest.
Exciting. Let's listen to the calls.
Hi, who's this?
It's Tori.
You're one of our grand prize winners.
All right, man. Great to be here this morning.
We got some good news for you.
Okay.
You are one of our grand prize winners.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome. Winning is fun. Just ask Tammy from Baraboo and Tori from Kewaunee.
Thank you. That's great.
Listen for future chances to text and win on your local Civic Media radio station and the app. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
And to wrap things up on Up North News Radio for this Friday, we go back a couple of weeks to another Friday conversation, a little bit of group therapy, as I called it at the time, with two of my favorite Cubs friends, which is really something to say there, both Dan Schumacher, who normally appears here on Fridays, and my old TV 13 colleague in Eau Claire, Bob Gallagher, got together with both of them virtually to kind of talk them off the ledge when it comes to what the Cubs were supposed to do this year and what they've ended up doing instead. Mr. Gallagher, how are you?
Nice to see you, Pat, and nice to see good old friend Dan Schumacher.
Where are you at? You're a little glitchy, but you're in a, looks like a shiny new building.
I am in a building. I'm inside the John and Carolyn Sonntag Center. It's the new facility that's been built down on Menominee Street on the near UW-Eau Claire, and it is a gorgeous facility. We're working on a couple part story on the opening of it, which will be opening up in the beginning of July.
Or as I refer to it, the house that Schumacher built.
That's right.
Because that man worked his tail off as athletic director at UW-Eau Claire to help with many other people, of course, to make that vision a reality. But Dan, now you're up in Northland College in Ashland, but I got a feeling you still got your little proud papa moments when you see what's behind Bob and when you see what's going up with that new Sonntag Center.
Oh, sure. But that's like with every project that I've done. I had local people that were down in Eau Claire last weekend for their daughter's softball tournament, and they used the softball stadium that I first built. It was my first project when I got there, was to build that softball stadium. Every project, I built so many things at many different schools. But this one is a big one. I'm really happy for the football program, especially. I think that's the game changer to turn the corner for the program. I still hope that they wind up playing on campus. I don't think, as much as it probably I get abused for it, I don't think Carson Park is a recruitable stadium compared to the others in the league. But this, because of the indoor facility part, really kind of levels the playing field from a football recruitment standpoint. So I'm happy that the project is closing up. People have been very gracious about complimenting things. I mean, I spent 7 years designing the building, you know, as well as fundraising with Kim Way. So, I think it's a game changer as far as basketball goes. One of my old players, Zach Melvick, is the new head coach there. He played for me at Winona State when I was there, won a couple national championships with him. So they got a good coach and for basketball to move into the building. And, you know, I got a signature on the main girder up there in the ceiling. So yeah, I'm very proud of it. It's a great building. It's good. It's a game changer for all of the region, to be honest with you.
Is there a broadcast booth in one of those areas that we can name after Bob then as well? Because he's sure. been involved in supporting Blue Gold Sports for how long you been there now? 40 years, Bob, it feels like?
30.
30. 30. And the thing is, he's not even kidding, folks. That's the thing. It's
No, I mean, I just hope maybe I can get like a seat, you know, maybe a seat to sit in.
I think we can find one seat for you. I think we can work on a personal seat license or something like that. Bob and Dan put up with a lot of our grief because they are good Chicago boys who have truly made Wisconsin their home, but we know where their heart is still is. So let's begin the group therapy session, shall we, boys? I went and found an article that says the headline is "Don't Sleep on the Cubs, Continuity and Youth Delivering to Chicago as They Begin to Find Their Stride." Now, the punchline is that this article is from a month ago. And things, would you write that same headline today, Bob?
Well, we're on a one-game winning streak, so. I mean, I guess there's hope.
I don't understand. 30 days ago, they were terrible. So how did I write that article even 30 days ago because they were bad?
I mean, two nights ago, you thought, you know, I was going to bring some new material to your show, Pat. And, you know, when they blew the game the other night and the 3-run homer in the ninth inning, you know, Dan said I lost my mind. I don't know. There's nothing else I can lose right
now. Bob has never been shy about letting loose with his criticisms when warranted. And if I had a dime for every time he said, "That's it, I'm never watching this team again," whether it's the Cubs or the Bears or whatever, I'd have more than a few dimes in my pocket right now, Bob. But
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Jane is off, but I, Greg Bach, am hosting in her stead. We welcome Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, as well as Civic Media's very own Luke Mathers. Don't miss it.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10. Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, and on the Civic Media app.
Celebrating freedom, unity, and the spirit of America this holiday, I'm Jane Matinair, host of Matinair on Air.
And I'm co-host Greg Bach. From all of us with the Civic Media Radio Network to you,
happy 4th of July!
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.